Welcome to the Pet Cancer Vet. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Susan Ettinger from the Animal Specialty Center in Westchester, New York, who is a board-certified oncologist devoted to diagnosing and treating dogs and cats with cancer. Dr. Sue's motto for her patients is live longer, live well. We are here to give you hope because cancer is a treatable disease. If you would like your question answered on the air, please email radiopetlady@gmail.com. We want the advice and support you get from Dr. Sue to also help others facing the same challenges. The Pet Cancer Vet is a production of 8 Paws LLC and Dr. Sue Cancer Vet PLLC, which are solely responsible for its content. To hear more episodes of this show or any of the pet talk shows I co-host with experts, please go to radiopetlady.com and visit the podcast library. The Pet Cancer Vet is brought to you by Best Pet RX, a unique compounding pharmacy for pets that works directly with veterinarians to create a custom version of medications. Does your pet hate the taste of a pill, or is it too large to get down? Or do you have cats who are famously anti-pill? Best Pet RX can turn any medication for dogs and cats into a custom-flavored oral paste, chewable tablet, or a liquid, and will keep trying formulations at no extra charge until they create a flavor your pet will actually like. Ask your vet to contact Best Pet RX Compounding Pharmacy so your pet will get well and stay well happily. Well, Dr. Sue, Pet Cancer Vet, I have a wonderful person to talk to tonight. Wonderful because cancer isn't wonderful, but her three black Labrador retrievers are wonderful, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. You know, there isn't a Labrador that I don't adore.
That's absolutely right. So anybody who, if you get cancer and you have a Labrador, you'll get even more special treatment from Dr. Sue. That isn't to wish that on any Labrador.
No.
But Lori in Morrison, Colorado, got in touch with us through your Facebook page, and as she calls herself quite proudly, is quite a geek, very specific woman. She really is paying attention to the melanoma that her beautiful dog Pepper has, 7-year-old black lab, and had 3 mast cell tumors removed with clean margins, all low grade. She gives even more specifics than that, but a malignant melanoma on the left foot. Pepper is a lucky dog because he's got Lori for a mom, and she's got an oncologist and even had a vet visit this morning. But she's coming to you, Dr. Sue, to ask a lot of questions about very subtle things to do with the melanoma vaccine and melanoma generally. So, Lori, welcome to the Pet Cancer Vet. We are so thrilled you got in touch with Sue.
Thank you, Tracy, and hello, Dr. Sue. And as Tracy mentioned, Pepper did have a melanoma on her left front paw pad. Mm-hmm. It was about the size of a pencil eraser. And we had that taken off, and it was excised completely, and she has no signs of metastatic disease, which is great. And at Colorado State University, the way they put it was that she was a stage zero because she doesn't have any sign. Yeah, great, because no signs of disease, right? But we know there's some level of microscopic disease. And so that's where my question comes in on the melanoma vaccine. Since she's not a stage 2 or 3, the way the majority of the studies that I've read seem like they've looked at, what are your thoughts on a dog that's a stage 0 and the melanoma vaccine?
Let's first say that Dr. Sue was one of the doctors at the Animal Medical Center who was very much involved in the development of this vaccine at the Animal Medical Center in conjunction with Memorial Sloan Kettering Human Cancer Center. So Dr. Sue, take it away on the melanoma vaccine and maybe fill everyone in on what that is and how it works.
Yeah, so I was a resident at the Animal Medical Center in New York City during part of it, because it was many years. You know, my residency was only 2 years, but there was many years of clinical trials and development for this vaccine. And so most of us think of a vaccine to give something to prevent disease, like rabies. But this is a newer, you know, sort of generation of vaccines in people and in dogs where we're giving the vaccine to treat the disease. And melanoma, actually, it's a very good disease to stimulate the immune system with a piece of the melanoma cancer, to stimulate the immune system to then go and target those cancer cells. Most of the studies, you're very right, you've done your homework, are in dogs with oral melanoma, which is the more common location, and digit melanoma. And the paw pad, I wouldn't say, is considered the same as digit melanoma, but there were some, based on the information that you had provided us via email, there were some worrisome characteristics on the biopsy, and I think that's on your body map, but there was a very high mitotic rate. So that's one of those, how many cancer cells do they see dividing when they look at the biopsy? And so that alone has been shown to be very predictive for melanomas, whether it's in the mouth, in the digit, or even in the skin. Most dogs with skin melanoma have a very less aggressive form, but there are some that are more aggressive. And we have used the melanoma vaccine both in my AMC days and now in private practice a little further north of there. You can use the melanoma vaccine for non-oral, non-digit sites that you know that the clinician thinks is, you know, worrisome to prevent metastasis.
Well, let me ask you, the word digit, I'm assuming that means a toe. One of the toes on a dog's foot is called
exactly.
The digit, because most of us don't actually know that. So in this case, Pepper's cancer was on the paw pad. Is the paw pad so very different from a toe, since they're like cheek by jowl?
You know, I just think it's a less common location, and I'm going to bet that, you know, when they do studies, they have what they call an exclusion criteria, and they're probably just including digit. I mean, most of them, they're actually further down on the toe, sometimes near the tail, you know, the nail bed.
Right.
And they're very aggressive, and often they'll cause bony changes, so it'll look like a bone tumor, but a lot of times it's, you know, because they're that invasive. But for me, what is worrisome and why I would recommend something systemic for Pepper is, again, that high mitotic rate, you know,
right.
And you reported that 16 per 10
yes.
High power fields. And for mm-hmm. most melanomas, whether it's the skin in another location, 3 is usually considered the cutoff. So it's not even close to me that we have a potentially, you know, aggressive melanoma. It just happens to be in a less common site. In terms of using it in the, you know, we've removed the primary cancer and there's no evidence that the cancer has spread. That's what we know, actually, for the oral ones, the more common location, the dogs do better with the vaccine if they don't have, sorry, just hit my mic, if they don't have any evidence of spread. And you've removed the primary cancer. So we call that minimal residual disease. So again, this would be a dog that I would expect to respond better to the melanoma vaccine than if you said, oh, I'm not going to do surgery. Let's just try the melanoma vaccine and see how the dog does.
So you would say go for both, and both is what has already been gone for. So yes, she's following the right course of action. We want to take a quick break, but when we come back, I wish you would talk a little bit about something that Lori is obviously the one that brought it up in her email, but it's new to me, and we haven't ever discussed it on the show before, the idea that there's a staging or a seriousness about cancer based on how rapidly the cells are dividing. I didn't even know there was such a thing to measure. So I'd love to talk about that too, because that's another way for people to realize there's a lot of information that should and can be gotten when they're looking into a lump or a bump. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to find out about this mitosis, and so are the rest of you. The Radio Pet Lady Network is brought to you by Actify, a new joint supplement for dogs made right here in the United States, powered by an extract of blue-green algae from Oregon. It comes as a tasty, soft chew that invites you to take the Actify Challenge. See an improvement in your dog's mobility and attitude over 1 month, or they'll refund your purchase price. You have nothing to lose, and your dog has everything to gain. Like my own old dog, Jazzy, who often didn't even lift her head off her bed until Actify brought her back to life and restored her positive energy. Actify. Unleash the power of blue-green algae at activphy.com. And put Actify Friends at checkout for $10 off. We are also supported by Best Pet RX, a unique compounding pharmacy for pets that works directly with veterinarians to create a custom version. Does your pet hate the taste of a pill? Is it too large to get down? Or do you have cats who are famously anti-pill? Best Pet RX can turn any medication for dogs and cats into a custom flavored oral paste, chewable tablet, or a liquid. They guarantee to keep trying formulations at no extra charge until they create a flavor your pet will actually like. Have your vet contact Best Pet Rx Compounding Pharmacy so giving medicine can be successful and pleasant, and your pet will get well and stay well. We are back with Lori in Morrison, Colorado, who not only has Pepper, this beautiful black lab, but three black labs. Their photo will be on the Facebook page of the show and somewhere in a link to it in the podcast of this show. Dr. Sue, Lori had brought up the issue of the tissue, and when they looked at this biopsy, I had no idea you could look at a biopsy and see the cells dividing. Isn't the tissue dead when you look at it, or isn't everything dormant when you look at a biopsy?
Well, part of the way that normal cells and cancer cells divide is cell division, which is called mitosis. And there's stages that you can see under the microscope, and there's one where the cell is actually dividing, and you see the mitotic figures. I always tell my interns it's cell sex. You're catching, but that's that catches their attention. But you're catching the cells dividing. They're one cell is becoming two cells, and for many cancers, the mitotic rate, so how many cells you happen to see dividing in that biopsy sample, has been shown to be prognostic or predictive. A lot of times you're not reported that mitotic rate because it's incorporated into the grading system.
It's folded in, sort of.
Right. So the mitotic rate has been shown to be very predictive for those connective tissue cancers, the soft tissue sarcomas that my nurse, Smokey, he had that soft tissue sarcoma.
Right. His grew so fast, grade one. Right.
But his was a grade one. And one of the main three characteristics is the mitotic rate. Mitotic rate recently, in the last couple of years, for mast cell tumors has been shown to be very predictive alone. So, and the cutoff is changing in some of the papers, but anywhere from 5 to 6, for a grade 2 mast cell tumor can change the prognosis to just a couple of months versus, over 2 years.
Wow.
But I always point out, my mom's dog with a mast cell tumor had a very high mitotic rate. And I told her, based on this really good paper that came out a couple years ago, Mom, I'm really sorry to tell you, but it said that the dog's probably only going to live, a black Labrador, of course, is only going to live.
It runs in the family.
Is only going to live 3 to 4 months based on this paper. And that dog lived another, I think 8 or 9 months from the diagnosis of mast cell tumor and died of something else. So, there will be ranges, and, I talk about the statistics sort of give you a reasonable expectation, but they don't predict lightning, they don't predict Pepper, every dog is an individual, but that mitotic rate has been shown in many tumors, like melanoma, especially for the skin form, where some are benign and some are malignant, to help us predict, whether or not we should be more concerned or it may be, more benign.
But when you're looking at a biopsy under the slide, and it isn't just the person in the lab that's looking, often a good oncologist wants to look themselves, right? Isn't that piece of tissue dead? Are there still things reproducing? Is sex still happening?
When you take I always call it a photo in time. So when you take that tissue out, it's dropped in formalin, which, hardens the tissue, and then they slice it up. So yeah, it is a snapshot in time, and you can take that formalin block, and they do that in the labs, because when I want to get second opinions on something that was taken off 6 months ago, I call the lab and they slice another sliver biopsy and put it on a new slide, and that will last for years. But it's still the same photo in time. It doesn't change over time. So it's just like going back and looking at a picture from, the beginning of the year. The picture doesn't change. It reflects what the tumor was doing at that time in that sample, in that part of the sample.
Right.
And that's why sometimes if you look at it, a centimeter over in a 10 centimeter mass, sometimes in some areas there's more dead cells and they can't really figure it out, or there's too much inflammation. So sometimes they'll go and recut a separate section. That's what that's all about.
So Lori, you went today to see your oncologist and get the melanoma vaccine. Is that right?
That's right. We had our first dose this morning at 10 o'clock Mountain.
Listen to her. She's such a geek. She's got everything. But you know what? Good for you. I mean, the more specific, the better. On the, the very fact that you saw this little eraser-sized lump on her toe, how many people Dr. Sue, with your new campaign amongst oncologists, See Something, Do Something, how many people would be as active and as jump in and do something as Lori? Do you think it's uncommon? I do.
I think it's uncommon, but I'm hoping that this cancer awareness program will change it. And we're, you know, an eraser is about the size of a pea, and that's, you know, about a centimeter, and that's, which is half a penny, half the diameter of a penny. So we're really encouraging, you know, pet owners and primary veterinarians, when there are those little lumps and bumps, not just to keep an eye on them, but to stick a needle in them and aspirate them. You know, in looking back in some of the information that you sent us, you know, when you first found the melanoma, you noted that you were told it was benign and just, right. You know, and things like that. And so luckily this was still very small, but, you know, I always remind people that many tumors, even malignant tumors, can be cured with just surgery if we can remove them when they're small before they have spread. So even though we don't want to think about our pets having cancer or a malignant cancer, a lot of our pets can do really well if we diagnose them early. And I, you know, I'm a big proponent that early detection can save lives and money, you know, because yes. That means less surgeries. You know, we don't want to go back and do what I call those scar revisions because we left cancer cells the first time. Because we took it off without knowing what it was. So, you know, and keep on top of those lumps and bumps because, you know, we've talked about pets that have had 10 lipomas and then the 11th one was a malignant cancer like Smokey. So, you know, and, you know, on the flip side, not every mass that Pepper's going to have is going to be a malignant cancer, you know. So it's a balance between being vigilant and, you know, and not getting complacent.
Well, Lori is not a complacent woman.
No,
she's got
no.
This dog mapped. I think, you know, you could like it better than Magellan had a map of whatever world he was trying to find. But Lori, you were originally told, don't worry, it's nothing. But and they didn't want to do a needle biopsy, or how did that go? Because that's an important part of the story for people to understand.
Sure. So it was really interesting because when you looked at the spot on her foot, we found it in January. We had had quite a bit of snow. It was kind of bitterly cold down in the negatives for the temperature, much less for the actual wind chill factor out there. And the vet who looked at it said, you know, I think it's just where when she's gone outside and she's maybe, you know, walked on the deck, it's just the cold has sort of got her a little bit of frostbite, or it's pulled on the pad, and so that's what she thought it was, because it really wasn't a lump, so to speak. It
right.
didn't, you know, come out from the paw. It was just this little rough spot. It was kind of a crack. And there was
How did you find it, Lori? Were you lying on the floor with her in front of the wood stove, and you're, like, giving her a foot massage? How do you find that?
How did you know? That's it. Yes. No. because there was that little bit of blood, it was showing up on our floor, and I think actually my husband was the one who said, "Hey, it looks like somebody's bleeding."
I'll be
and
darned.
So just a quick look at the feet. That's what we saw, and so the vet said, you know, just put a little liquid bandage on it because I think it's just, you know, a cracked paw pad, and so I did that, and it actually did sort of heal up, if you will. It was still like a little crack there, but it wasn't anything that was bleeding anymore, and it wasn't until June that it started bleeding again. So I took her back in. At that point, the vet who I'd seen at the same clinic, but she had left, so I was seeing a different vet, and she looked at it and said, you know, I want to do a punch biopsy because I'm just worried this could be something else.
But isn't that lucky that there was so little growth or change, even though 6 months had gone by?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, so I started reading, you know, the Dog Cancer Survival Guide.
Hooray.
That really made me realize, quite honestly, what a monster I was sort of dealing with on that paw pad. And I did, you know, think I was really lucky, and Pepper was really lucky, that it wasn't more aggressive, that we were able to get it excised, and that we haven't seen any spread.
And do you mind my asking, if with three dogs, it's possible you did not have pet insurance?
I do not have pet insurance.
Okay, everybody, yet again, please maybe send this out as a huge shout out. Get pet insurance. Because for those three labs, it would have been about $30 or $35 a dog per month. And we don't have pet insurance for a crack on the paw, because that doesn't really add up to anything, and we don't have it for itchy skin, unless it turns into really bad itchy skin, but we do have it when the little funny crack on the paw turns into what can be an incredibly expensive, maybe it's not in this case, treatment and diagnostic process, where if you have three dogs, you think, I can't really afford that. I love Pepper maybe the most, but I'm going to have to let Pepper have cancer. There are people who would not be able to make the choice to treat, you know? So now there's no point in you getting it for her for cancer, which is the most expensive thing that can be done medically with a dog or for a dog, but you might consider it for the other two. I'll send you an email on the side because, you know, once any of us have brushed up against cancer, and Sue lives with people having this shocking realization day in and day out, It is a wake-up call about a lot of things, like see something, do something, and do it sooner, and question authority and so forth, but also to really embrace the idea of pet insurance. It's there for the big-ticket items, and it's a very small peace of mind to pay for the day when you ever have to make a costly decision. The cost is not yours. It's, you know, somebody else's, right? We don't have car insurance for the time when we need our oil changed, or even if we have a fender bender, we have it for when there's a big old crash. And so, you know, that's why you have pet insurance. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about some of the wellness things that you're doing for Pepper, and if there's anything else that Dr. Sue might recommend. We'll be right back. Support for this show also comes from The Honest Kitchen, a family-owned company that makes dehydrated pet foods from 100% human-grade ingredients. Lucy at The Honest Kitchen knows that the least processed foods are the most nutritious. Their all-natural products can assist cats and dogs with chronic health issues like itchy skin, ear infections, and digestive problems, which are often linked to a diet of poor quality or highly processed ingredients. Just add water to the dry mix of protein, fruits, and vegetables to create a fresh, warm, healthy meal for your cat or dog. Support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog or puppy is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. Shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones and avoid unnecessarily over-vaccinating dogs. VaxaCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxaCheck for cats is coming soon. This show is supported by Spot Platinum, an allergy test developed by a privately owned company that has done over 500,000 allergy tests during 25 years to measure a pet's reaction to 90 common elements. Is your dog constantly scratching, itching, licking? He might have allergies that the Spot Platinum blood titer test can detect, and for which they can make a USDA-approved serum custom-tailored to your dog's results to control his symptoms. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. So, Dr. Sue, Lori has got Pepper on a grain-free diet. Now, I'm not sure exactly what you mean by grain-free. Do you mean all protein, or you mean a kibble that's called grain-free?
I have moved to a kibble that is grain-free.
And what about protein? Low carb. She's being silent, the woman who knows too many things. Well, grain-free means that there's no wheat in it, but
right.
It could have corn in it, it could have potatoes in it, it could be high glycemic, it could be high carb. The protein might be not very high protein or very high quality protein, or it might be high.
This is actually one of the foods that is recommended in the book.
Oh, I'll be danged. Well, Sue, were you part of that recommendation process?
Not directly. I mean, I edited or I proofread most of it. And I've actually, in the last, I guess it was last summer when I went to the holistic conference, I did, you know, update, and I have a blog about it. I call it My Evolving Thoughts on Food and Dogs. And so I went to a great lecture, by a holistic vet about, you know, food and what should be in it. And, you know, grains have gotten a really bad name recently.
Yes.
And so what I think what his point was and what I wrote about in the blog is that, you know, all grains are not created equal.
That's
what
right.
He really thinks we should keep away are from the GMOs, you know, the corn, the genetically modified corns and things like that. But some grains actually have a lot of good minerals and nutrients in them. So you just want to look at where your grains are coming from. And, you know, on the flip side, when one of my patients maybe has a reaction to a medication like chemo and gets an upset stomach, in my handouts, I still say, give, you know, white rice or brown rice and
right.
some chicken, and people go, oh, but it's carbs and it's going to feed the cancer. A couple of days, you know, in the grand scheme of things, to help them get over some diarrhea is not going to feed the cancer.
Right.
So I don't think all carbs are bad. And I also think, you know, I'm a big proponent of adding fruits and vegetables, especially vegetables, because, you know, they have a lot of, you know, anti-carcinogenic, you know, compounds in them. Some of them are in some supplements as well. But we know that the number one and number two lifestyle risk for people with cancer is obesity and a diet low in fruits and vegetables. And there are some really interesting studies in dogs that get high vegetables that it can, like, decrease the incidence of bladder cancer in Scotty. So,
I'll be done.
You know, and people say, oh, well, carrots, why are you going to give carrots? They're one of the highest carbs. But, you know, there's a lot of good, you know, other cancer fighting compounds in there. So I think you got to balance it out. Do I recommend giving your dog white bread as a snack? No, you know, but I think, you know, grain free is very trendy and sexy right now in the dog food industry. You know, but
it doesn't it doesn't really add up to anything vis-a-vis high glycemic or carbs or the quality of what else is in the food, because potatoes are a carb, no doubt about
it. But keep away from, you know, like you were saying, you want to keep away from some of the high glycemic stuff. And I really think it's, you know, it's the GMOs and the genetically modified organisms that I think you want to keep from. And I think the pet food industry, whether they're doing it, that's because what people want, they are catching on with that. But, I do think the whole grain-free is just the very current trend. And whether or not, you know, if a dog doesn't eat it, then I'm okay with that, you know. Obviously, you can't control everything. But I do think there's something to be said for a low-carb diet, high-protein diet, you know, healthy fats and things like that. Supplementing, you know, I've talked about this with you, Tracy. I'm always interested to see what my current black Labrador Matilda will eat, what vegetable. And she eats more vegetables than
your
Paige
children.
Ever did. Well, no, my kids are great too,
yeah,
I have to
are.
Say. But, you know, I mean, she eats romaine lettuce, for goodness sakes. Like, what
wow.
is, yeah. But, you know, so again, you know, if you're trying to, you know, toss your dog some carrots, toss your dog some broccoli and things like that, and as long, you know, and mix it in with her food or use it as a treat. But I think those are other good ways that you can get, you know, even though they're quote unquote carbs, you can get some, you know, good nutrients in your dog.
And you do give her half a cup of cottage cheese a day, which is, or twice a day, but that's a perfectly nice protein source, but I wouldn't just give her cottage cheese as her protein source. I like to look at any kibble, whether it's a dog who's never going to have cancer cross their path or they're already, you know, systemically fighting it. I really like to think of even the highest quality, best kibble as a side dish. And I really like people to think of protein as the main thing on the plate, real protein. And I'd be interested in another show, Sue, to talk about your evolving thoughts and share the blog on the Radio Pet Lady Network blog, and also talk about what this doctor talked about at your oncology conference. But I do believe that there is such a well-ingrained fear of feeding quote-unquote people food to dogs, which has been a beautiful job by the pet food industry, which makes not a nickel when you fry up some beef or chicken or fish or eggs for your dog. They're out of pocket when you do that. So they've got people so browbeaten, Lori, into no people food that people have lost their common sense about it. And I really do believe that if you can feed a high protein diet, not a kibble that claims to be 28% protein, but actual real protein, but different proteins, not just eggs or just cottage cheese or just yogurt, but real meats and real fish.
I was actually looking at the recipes that are part of the book that talk through the veggies and the meats and things like that, and it's just a matter of, with three big dogs, figuring out, is that something that we can and should take on, or is it that the, because it is a high-quality kibble that we're feeding, is working. And the cottage cheese is actually the reason I'm doing it is because I'm mixing it with flaxseed oil.
I saw that. But
yeah,
why not? Why aren't you using an omega-3 fish oil like Nordic Naturals? Why have you gone to flaxseed instead of marine-based lipids, as we like to call them?
She's doing fish oils as well.
Yep. So.
Oh, you are doing fish oil as well? I missed that.
Yeah, so I have done fish oil off and on. It sometimes upsets her tummy. So one of my other labs, he's been on fish oil for probably 3 or 4 years.
Well, what brand? Do you mind my asking what brand?
I would have to look and see.
Well, if it's not Nordic Naturals, that's okay. That's very unlike you, Lori. This woman is so organized.
I'm so sorry.
Let me just say.
And fabulous, Lori. You're fabulous. Yeah,
the best. I mean, I'm like, I want to have a thought map like Lori. Maybe my thoughts would be better organized if I had a thought map instead of just like in the dark with a small LED flashlight, which is sort of what the inside of my brain looks like. Let me just say about omega-3 oils. That plant-based has some value, but nothing compared to fish oil. However, one of the worst things anyone can do, and this is pretty much proven by science, but people don't have the facts, is give any sort of a fish oil, a marine lipid, which is highly volatile, if you will. It's not stable at all. That comes either in a plastic bottle or a pump bottle. Because it is not just exposed to oxygen minimally, but maximally every time you push the pumper. So dogs who don't want it, or it stinks and smells fishy, or they get the runs from it, probably getting rancid oil. Because any fish oil, and there are a number of brands that are sold in a big pump bottle, you think, well, that's easy. Squirt, 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 squirt. It's not hand cream. It should be either in a dark glass bottle refrigerated, which is the cheapest way to give Nordic Naturals. I learned after giving the capsules forever. And you just pour a teaspoon into each of their bowls every day. But it has to stay in its beautiful dark blue bottle in the fridge. But before it gets in the bottle, there are very few laws and regulations in this country about the handling of fish oil. Either where it comes from or how it's handled during its processing. Unlike the Nordic countries like Norway, where one of the only actually products they have for export is fish oil. And they have an industry that is very, very old, ancient, centuries old, and under very tight regulation with very high standards for purity, freshness, handling, any kind of contamination. It all has to be triple filtered. And in the case of Nordic Naturals, which I say the name over and over, because if there's another company that handles their fish oil like this, bring it to me. You know, if they can undercut the price and equal that quality, great. But there's no reason for a dog to get an upset stomach on fish oil unless the fish oil has been mishandled or came from poor sources. I mean, I've seen fish oil in my CVS that if you look at the label, it says fish ingredients. They actually use the word fish ingredients and safflower oil. What is a fish ingredient? You either take the oil out of the fish and carefully filter it and so forth, or you're putting, what exactly, a fish ingredient? I mean, that doesn't even, there is no such word in AAFCO, so I don't know where they even come up with that. It may be ground up fish carcass that might have, you know, been on the dock. So, and that's for people, not just pets. So I would highly recommend switching to Nordic Naturals in the bottle. You can go to, they've been a sponsor of mine for years, and I've talked about them on many, many shows and in many blogs, because I just think it's a misunderstood aspect of nutrition. There's a lot. Sean Delaney, who is my co-host on Pet Food Advisors, who's a brilliant man, when he found out that Nordic Natural was my sponsor, he said, I don't afford it for myself and my wife, but my children have to have Nordic Naturals gummies. It's really, I know how important it is for brain function and eyes and skin and hair and joints. And I say, wow, you love yourself that little. It's nice that he loves his kids that much, but he knows how superior the quality is. If you go to NordicNaturals.com and you put Pet Radio 13 in the code box, there's free shipping and 15% off of anything you buy ever, not just one time. So you might consider it for all the dogs, and you get the big bottle of omega-3 pet oil. It lasts a long time. I mean, I have three dogs and now down to two, but Maisie eats for two and quite the little eater. And she, by the way, has extremely bad digestion. She has fiber-responsive diarrhea, and she's on massive amounts of added fiber and high fiber halo. And she can have fish oil with no problem. And she's like a very borderline digestive girl. So I would just sort of recommend that in addition. Yeah. Dr.
The
Sue,
reason, sorry. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the reason I actually do the cottage cheese and flaxseed oil is because it's something called the Budwig Protocol. Joanna Budwig, I'm sure it's Budwig because it's German.
Right.
she was a pharmacist and also biochemist and physicist, all these things. And she did research on cancer in humans. And she found that cottage cheese and flaxseed oil together basically combated tumor growth. And so I actually started doing that. I read about it for human cancer and decided to give it a try with pepper. And as I've talked to the different oncologists, they've said, hey, you know, we've heard about it. We haven't seen any of the clinical trials, obviously, but sure can't hurt. And so it's another one of those it can't hurt sort of things that we've been doing. But I would love to.
The nice thing about the fish oil is that there's all sort. Ms. Budvig may have lived in 1920 or 40 or 60, but there's a lot of proof, you know, scientific proof of very high concentrations. Nordic Naturals actually makes something called Pro Omega, and a lot of cancer patients take it as an anti-inflammatory. So,
excellent.
Yeah, probably a little newer thought process. Who knows? Maybe wherever she came from, there wasn't a good access to fresh fish oil, in which case flaxseed oil would be more stable and less able to be rancid, and who knows? We've run out of time, ladies, but the really great news is that pepper is on the right track. You caught it early, and it's great for people to understand that you just have to notice these symptoms, go to your vet, go back to your vet, and, you know, if possible, have pet insurance so that when you go back, you aren't, like, squeezing your eyes shut, not just because, oh, please don't let it be cancer, but please don't let it empty my bank account, right?
Right.
Sort of helps. We've got all of our paws crossed for pepper, and the other two remain healthy because the odds, I guess, are with them, right? One out of three or something. So poor Pepper, she's the one who got it, and we hope the others stay nice and healthy. And keep us informed of how things go with the melanoma vaccine, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you both so much.
Have a great night, Lori, and thank you for joining us and bringing this to everyone's attention. Dr. Sue, about your evolving thoughts on the cancer diet, that is definitely a blog we'd like to share on the Radio Pet Lady Network blog. But also, if you have evolving ideas about individual foods or menus or food feeding ideas that have evolved since the Dog Cancer Survival Guide, that would be great to know, too.
Absolutely. We'll talk about it on our next show.
We will, because I can say about the Dog Bible, there's a lot of stuff I've gotten there, especially around nutrition, which was the part I was the most proud of, kind of thinking I'd nailed it. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, it's between covers. It's permanent. It's there forever. And there's things I want to change.
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, just real quick, that's what we were taught in, you know, that dogs should eat dog food,
that's,
you know,
right.
And that only dogs with like severe skin issues should be on home cooked
right.
diets. And that's really something that I think has changed over the last 15 years. And I
a
think
lot.
It's a nice change.
Very. On the other hand, they need a balanced nutrition, so they got to balance it with something.
Right.
But
you can't just give them chicken.
Yeah, that's right. They can't live on chicken and rice alone. Dr. Sue, thank you so much. Thanks for being part of the melanoma vaccine development. That's a pretty great feeling to find out that it's out there keeping dogs that have it from getting it again, right?
Yeah, it was a great project by my mentor.
So wonderful. Well, we look forward to more such developments and inventions and discoveries so that they can help more dogs and more people as well. Have a great night, Dr. Sue. All of you know how to find Dr. Sue on Facebook, and you can always write to us at radiopetlady@gmail.com if your dog or cat has any kind of cancer, because she wrote the Dog Cancer Survival Guide, but she's a real kitty lover and knows a lot about kitty cats. So you can write to us about that, too. Thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you soon.